Hello, my name is Adam Morgan. I'm the founding partner of Eat Big Fish. And today it's my very great pleasure to be joined by Harold Plyer, who is Executive Vice President and President of Global Advertising at Reddit, and Rebecca Birchnell, who is Managing Partner Diageo at PhD UK. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks so much, Adam. It's so great to be here today with you and Rebecca. Looking forward to having some great conversations and some fun with Adam on the podcast today.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me to be part of this, Adam. And yes, Harold, very much looking forward to getting into some of the detail around, I guess, our shared values, our shared views from a business perspective of our respective companies, but also how we see that play out in some of the work that we get to do with brands and our advertising partners.
Harold, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about kind of straight away was, you know, Reddit is a really big company now, right? The days of you being this small, gritty little challenger have passed. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, what does it mean for Reddit to be a challenger today? And why is it important to maintain that challenger mindset, given your kind of current business ambitions?
Yeah, thanks, Adam, for asking that. Look, there's always like this definition, like what is really big? But yes, I will say, like, you know, Reddit, we're definitely an established company. We've been around for 15 years. We have a really large global user base. And, you know, we have a lot of communities whereby people are interacting about various topics that are their passion. So from that regard, you could say we're a very established company. Having said that, I think there's still much more for us to do. We are, you know, going into our international expansion. So we started opening up our presence in the UK market. So it's great to chat with you, as well as just the concept of how we do things at Reddit. Like, we are a community-based platform, and there's not that many out there. And we believe having this community concept challenges maybe the norm and makes it interesting for people to discuss their passions in a different way.
Tell us a little bit about your kind of international expansion. So how do you define your kind of market position in the UK? Are you the leader of the category you're in? Do you deliberately define yourself as being a kind of a challenger of a much larger category? How do you define the business that you're in effectively?
If you look at where we, from the consumer side, yes, we probably, I won't say like we're a leader, but we're up there. We have a lot of users in the UK. Luckily they love Reddit, and we love that they're interacting with our platform, that they're getting value out of that platform, and that they can research the interests that they have, that they can educate themselves about topics, as well as especially in this time of COVID, that whereby the physical world is a bit more limited, that they have this online community where they can, you know, where they can interact with each other. I think that's very important. So from that angle, I would say, like, I won't say we're leading, but we have a really good position. When it comes to the challenger part, right, when it comes to monetization and, you know, working with partners, we're only getting started. We have some great clients and partners already in the UK market, but we really want to spread our message about communities and how Reddit works and the value it can bring to challenger brands, because that's where we really have a lot of growth. And we're up against some larger players in the UK market from an advertising point of view or from a partnership point of view.
Rebecca, if I can turn to you. So clearly, you know, you're a very significant part of PhD and PhD success, and congratulations on Diageo, which I think was that a win last year?
Yes, it was. Yeah, we actually were told we'd won the business on the very first day of UK lockdown. a big moment for everybody, I think. And then, yes, first 3 months were obviously operating whilst in UK lockdown, which is always a fun way to start a relationship. But yes, yeah, a new win for the agency.
It's been some time since PhD was a funky little independent media company. You're now a significant and very influential media company, but you still put a lot of emphasis in the UK on retaining that challenger mindset, don't you? So what does that mean for you as you get bigger? How do you keep that mindset?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, we actually share quite a lot of the values that Reddit do from this perspective. And I think the way in which we maintain that challenger mindset is very much about how we galvanize our teams and our people and the culture that we have, the culture that operates around being open, being courageous, always kind of being, you know, the feisty underdog, as it were, in every way that we're looking at what we do. So whether that's the ideas that we have, the new approaches that we bring to clients, or the way that we operate internally as a business with our people, you know, helping everybody to be part of the DNA of the agency. And kind of, you know, giving people the permission to help shape how we continue to challenge competitors around us as they flip, change, shift and grow.
I'm really interested in some of the words you used there, Rebecca. You talked about open, courageous, the feisty underdog. Harold, you've talked in the past about the fact that Reddit actually is in a sense all about kind of being there for challengers. And you've equally talked about openness as a key part of it. There's quite an interesting kind of overlap there, isn't there, between two very different companies, but both of which are kind of espousing more of a challenger mindset.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons why we as companies also partner well. We have this, I think, for our challenger mindset as a company, as Reddit, we have this really good company value that is default open. And it is, we really believe like internally that if we share as much information as we can, we allow people to always give feedback as direct as possible. And therefore we have all these idea flows going through our organization. With that approach, we think we're going to be more nimble, more flexible, and therefore more successful by challenging the norm and looking at different approaches, how we can make things happen. And, you know, we spoke about communities about that one, as a concept. I think the other one is like, you know, people can be who they want to be on Reddit. They don't have to sign up by their name. They can go in an anonymous way onto Reddit. And we've seen that really leads to even more honest and true discussions. And I think that's a great value add for our challenger brands to be active on our platform, to have that authenticity on our platform and that real opportunity to engage with these community members on our platform.
Yes, that authenticity that you talk about is clearly very important to you. And that for you is intimately kind of, connected to this notion of openness and default openness, is it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I think so. Like we want to be default open, or we are, I would say, as a company value, default open internally. And I can, you know, there's plenty of examples of that. We still have like a weekly all hands that is run by Steve, our CEO. And, you know, he takes any question that he will get from anyone, he will just give the most open and honest answer back, which I think just sets the tone. And then also like for our platform, because we have all these communities, people can go in there and they can really just discuss in depth about what is top of mind for them. And these could be, you know, about your first mortgage or buying a first car, but it could also be about religion or about politics. And I think that's one of the things that we find key is we want to be a default open platform that represents the real world and let the discussions happen as they happen.
And Rebecca, you've done quite a lot of work on kind of communities yourself, haven't you? And the power of it. Tell us a little bit about the work that you've done and how this relates to this notion of authenticity in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I talk specifically about Diageo and, you know, the power and the scale of that size of the business, one of the things that is probably most interesting actually for a lot of the guys that work across the account is really the breadth of brands that sit within there. And there are brands, we typically refer to them as new to world or incubator brands. These brands who are actually coming into their categories to challenge something. It might be the category convention. It might be the way that the product is crafted, made, sold, you know, the supply chain, etc. But our core route to how we drive success from them starts with the power of a community that sits behind them. You know, a group of people, a collective often, that actually empower people to understand more about those brands, get into the skin of the brand story. I think, you know, the brands that sit in there for me that very much do this is Seedlip, which is absolutely got, I don't know how familiar you guys are with it, but it's got a really clear story of innovation and desire to create a bespoke product in the market that didn't have alcohol at the heart of it and wasn't trying to replicate another drink. Right through to some of the newer kind of malt brands that we work with, like Copper Dog, where, you know, starting with that community and creating a sense of authenticity, through influence and talent, but also then reflecting that in the advertising that we create and the content that we build, is absolutely a key route to success for us. And that's why, you know, we would very much work with partners in social spaces like Reddit, where the communities are thriving and they're honest and they're open in the way that they talk about needs, you know, purpose, content, brands, etc.
We've seen that, right? Our what is so great for challenger brands, as Rebecca was just explaining, when it comes to the Reddit platform, is like we have this curious bunch of people on Reddit in their communities. We've done some third-party research, and we know that Redditors, the number one reason why they come to Reddit is to seek information. And they're really researching about new concepts or new ideas or things that are important for them or things that they want to explore. So as Rebecca said, and you know, we have some other examples also that I think are really compelling, right? Like if you are a challenger brand, often educating is very important, right? So for example, Tushy, like as a bidet company, like they really want to explain like what the benefits are using that. It's probably not the default norm. But there's a community on Reddit that wants to explore this. They are researching about this. So this is your golden opportunity as a challenger brand. You have this curious audience. They want to learn. You can share your message. You can share your message in that community, right? The communities, 82% of communities actually really appreciate having brands as part of the discussion if they're sharing the right information in an informative way. And this has been very valuable for them. Not only have they been able to educate people about their product, but they've actually started interacting with the communities and got ideas how to name some of their products or some parts of their product.
Right.
Which is something very powerful that is useful for a challenger brand.
Harold, let's kind of just make it a bit more personal and tell us a little bit about your own kind of challenger journey. So have you always been a challenger? Are you naturally are you a challenger by nature or nurture, I suppose, is my question for you.
I will say, just per definition, I'm a Dutch citizen. We are a small but mighty country, if you want to put it that way. And I think just growing up and you know, having lived in Holland for so many years and growing up there and having done a lot of my education there are just two aspects that come through. One is, you know, the Dutch language is not spoken by many people. So per definition, a lot of what you're doing would be an international language. It would be English orientated. Not all books get translated into Dutch. A lot of the TV programs will be in English. So just from that, you get that global view and that larger view about that there's more going on. There's more to be challenged. And then the other angle, I think, of it is you know, Holland, many Dutch companies had big ambitions and they were previously limited by having a very small domestic market, which means you cannot get that much capital by selling your product first nationally to build out reserves to start going international and build out. So with that concept, you know, I think the Dutch, from a challenger perspective, started creating like kind of like the first stock exchange, right? And found other ways to raise capital besides, you know, your domestic sales. And, you know, with that, they have been able to find a way to, as a small company, in a positive way, challenge and create some fantastic global Fortune 500 companies.
So it really is in your blood.
So I guess so. I mean, like if I say it that way, I'm like, yes, actually that has motivated me. That has inspired me. And I think it has given me, hopefully, people who know me would echo that, the will to challenge things and the will to go bigger and to go beyond what people might say is the next step.
Fantastic. Rebecca, what about you? Nature or nurture?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I would have to probably say nature as well. I am a planner at heart and a planner from a media perspective. So prior to taking on the Diageo role, was one of the heads of planning at PhD. And I think by its nature, you have to have a challenger spirit and mentality to do that and to make sure that you're, I guess, continuing to question and drive and challenge why we're doing what we're doing and how we're going to continue to take on and grow our clients' business, our clients' share of revenue within the markets for whichever category they sit in. So I think you kind of have to have that by nature. I mean, you could definitely learn it, but there's definitely a spirit within there that you need to have in order to be a planner and excel at planning.
So this is really interesting. So both of you are natural challengers, and at the same time, you're both working in what are quite now large organizations. And I imagine people will be coming into your teams who haven't necessarily signed up for those teams because they thought they were going to be joining challengers necessarily. They might be thinking they want to be just part of a big, stable organization. So how do both of you unlock the kind of challenger spirit in people for whom it's less natural, perhaps? Harold, how do you kind of unlock that challenger spirit in your teams when perhaps they're not quite there yet?
Yes, I think there. Rebecca mentioned a couple of things, which I think hit home with me also. Like, I think the key is like it's a lot about teaching, not telling. Right, was something that came up in my mind. I think if you tell people what to do the whole time, yeah, you might get success, but it's probably good if you're teaching people why things are happening, and therefore they can make their own conclusions and hopefully, you know, they start challenging you back in a positive way, right? And I always believe like one idea is great, but discussing ideas, and that's that, you know, that internal company value we have, discussing ideas and building ideas on ideas probably gets you to a better outcome than just one idea. So that sparring, that challenging each other, that really up-leveling each other. So I think the teaching versus telling part, and not telling as a leader what everyone should do, but teaching them what is possible. And therefore, I'm always surprised, like the initial idea I had, actually, when I look back at it, was a pretty bad idea because my team took it to the next level and made it a way better idea. So that encouragement, and then just not using things as a report card, right? I really love giving stretch goals. I think that is part of being a challenger leader, is giving stretch goals. But you know, making sure it's a stretch goal, it's motivational, it's not a report card. I say to them, we're not going to F you or D you, right, based on your score. Sorry, that's the American scoring system. So we're not going to give you a 1 out of 10 or a 3 out of 10, right? But let's set big, ambitious goals, and let's have fun to tackle it, and let's be positive and motivate each other to try to get there. And I think that's how we get the most done, and we'll probably get more done and challenge more other ideas with that concept.
Yeah, I love that. And I really love your previous point about how do you create that kind of stimulating internal debate. I think Diesel have a cultural value that's something like happy people fighting. Just that sense of how do you create a kind of a team that trusts each other and like each other, but boy, are they going to go at each other to get to the best possible idea, because that's how the thing elevates in the way you describe it. So Rebecca, tell us about you. So how do you kind of unlock that kind of challenger potential in your teams?
One of the things that we've always said at PhD, and I really like this as an agency type mentality, is that everyone is a planner. And what we don't mean by that is that everyone is a literal planner. Obviously within agencies there are lots of different roles, but essentially that sort of terminology, that language, that everyone's a planner, essentially gives everyone permission to be part of and to shape anything that might come their way from an agency perspective. So whether that is a response to a brief or an idea, creative development, even if you don't necessarily sit in that team or a part of that team, but right the way through to how we, you know, at the moment craft what we can offer parents who are working from home and homeschooling, and how people within the agency can come together to solve for that, to make the homeschooling experience the best that it can be, or how we make sure that as a group we are encouraging people to be open in what they're experiencing from a D&I perspective, and again how we solve for or build better practices. So I mean, the word openness, I know we've said it quite a few times now, really does sit, I think, at the heart of all of these themes in terms of how you foster that type of discursiveness and conversation. But I think the other thing is, you know, you do have introverted people who feel less comfortable to come into those environments. You know, if you, I'm sure Harold has similar, and yourself, Adam, if you run a workshop, there will be the same people that want to come every time and be very vocal in the workshop, and there will be others that often sit behind. And I think that does take a different skill set, which is more about a question and a conversation and an answer type approach, where you really drill down into the thought or the idea rather than being a bit more kind of bold in the way that you bring it to the front. Because, you know, people behave very differently in a challenger environment. Not everybody has the same approach to things.
That's great. So let's play that out and come back to this question of a challenger mindset in a large organization. So because there is this kind of characterization, isn't there, that challengers are small, sometimes new, sometimes hip, sometimes sort of startup-y. And you know, one of the things that I love is very old brands that take on kind of more of a challenger mindset. So I think in the past we've talked about kind of, you know, New Balance as a kind of 110-year-old company, and Tillamook in the States as a kind of 120-year-old company, I think, that took on a challenger mindset and saw extraordinary business results that came out of it. But one of the other myths is this thing about size. Harold, how can a challenger mindset be useful for a big company in your experience?
I think per definition, by having not only a challenger mindset, but I think regardless of size or age of the company, as you spoke about, right? I mean, the world is always changing, right? In any kind of dimension and in unexpected ways. I think about like COVID, right? It really changed the world in unexpected way, and you could say a negative way, but having said that, I think if you are large or small, how many years you've been in operation, right? These are challenging times per definition, and a challenger mindset and creating that nimbleness as a company and creating that that free flow of ideas, that open culture allows you probably to play into what's happening in society a bit quicker, a bit more successful for your own employees, but for your clients, for helping the larger good of society, right? So I think in general, like the challenger mindset is key to have for every company, because standing still is going backwards per definition in the world as the world changes.
Yeah.
So I would say that is one part of it, that you just need to create a challenger mindset, I think, just to be successful regardless of size, because curveballs will be thrown at you. Things will happen that you could not predict, and not having a challenger mindset, not being able to be nimble, not be able to adjust to that, will lead to worse results.
So there's a kind of resilience to, as you say, a changing world. There's a kind of a relentless ability to progress. There's that kind of agility, that kind of cultural sensitivity, the ability to plug in. Rebecca, when you because clearly within Diageo, just so putting on your kind of Diageo hat now, Diageo has small challenges and then enormous leaders. How do you help bring a challenger mindset to Diageo as a client?
Actually, some of the brands where we've brought that challenger mindset have been some of the biggest. And a lot of the time it has been because, you know, some of those points that you've just picked up on, Adam, have almost dropped off from a brand relevancy perspective. So it might be the case that the brand has perhaps fallen out of culture. Perhaps competitors have come in and overtaken, stolen share and really stood for something and stood out in the category. And therefore, our brand has somewhat fallen by the wayside. And actually, the way that we would do it with those brands specifically is to really establish why those things have occurred and what sits behind it, and then look at which of the challenger archetypes or behaviors or attitudes we can adopt in order to start creating a marketing strategy that can see that shift. I think one of the probably best examples, and again, builds on, you know, this idea that you can very much be a challenger brand if you're bigger and also older, not just small and young, is for Johnnie Walker, who I think it was back in November or December, celebrated its 200th birthday and is an original Scottish brand, but has very much moved globally, is a very big brand in the US and other markets, and has been somewhat eclipsed over in the UK by Jack Daniels and by some of the other kind of more craft whiskies and malts that have come into the category. And as a result of that, we've really looked at, you know, what does Johnnie Walker need to do in order to drive success? And it is to embrace a challenger mindset. And for us, actually, the challenger mindset on that brand is the dramatic disruptor. So rather than follow all of the category conventions, which just see us operating in a sea of sameness, how do we really break away from that to modernize what is a 200-year-old brand and bring it into a younger consumer group, which are typically buying a Jack Daniels and Coke when they go out on a weekend or sitting in the evenings. And I think that's actually really revolutionizing some of the work that we're doing for those bigger brands, is thinking smaller and more nimble and agile and more at pace in the way that we behave.
Harold, coming back to you, one of the really interesting things about talking to you about Reddit is that Reddit is not only a challenger itself, but it's also a platform, as you describe it, that can help other challengers be successful. Tell us a little bit more about how that works. How do you think the very nature of Reddit helps challengers succeed?
We have this really strong uniqueness on Reddit, whereby we have this curious audience that is really seeking information. They do 4x the amount of research sessions on Reddit versus what they're doing on other platforms. And they're really in the community, crystallizing their ideas, seeking information, and really educating themselves. And as they are in that process doing that, the great thing is like they're influencing each other. What that leads to is like, as that community is going through that process, that community member, and they build up this confidence. And once they build up the confidence about the brand or about the concept, they act faster. They purchase 9x faster. They will purchase on average 15% more from a lifetime value perspective. And the great news, I think, which is a true testimonial for these challenger brands, is that these community members then have a 12% higher NPS score. I mean, they've learned about that brand and they already start sharing good news about that brand with their family, with other community members, with friends. So this is that opportunity for a challenger brand to position themselves in front of a curious audience, right? Get them to interact and educate themselves and then become a really loyal brand member for that challenger brand.
Yeah, so just kind of building on what Harold was saying, I was doing some research earlier this week as to how the Christmas period had played out for some of our brands. And there was a brand called AU Vodka, I don't know if either of you have heard of it, who have literally come from nowhere at the back end of last year and come into the vodka category. And it smacked me as a really good example for us to talk about, because it builds on some of those points that Harold raised around community and intrigue and wanting to find out more about the brand. And I guess what it does, it's a really interesting brand in itself, because it's got multi-layers to the intrigue that it creates. So it absolutely leverages the power of a community that it's crafted. It's a vodka brand that sits in a similar place to a Ciroc. So it very much taps into a sort of grime hip-hop culture and builds from that. It has a quiet celebrity-backed partner in a British DJ called Charlie Sloth. But what it actually does is drive intrigue and interest from communities through its distinctiveness as a product. So it is in a gold foil bottle. It is distilled through gold, and the product itself, which sounds quite slightly strange, is very brightly coloured. So the raspberry vodka is actually blue. So it's, you know, if you see images of it, it's very clearly recognisable as that brand. That brand has spent almost no money on paid advertising in November and December, and instead it's used the AU Gold Gang Collective to tell its story online through social content, and this level of intrigue that it's been creating through the visuals of the brand. Not only did it become the number one search for vodka over the Christmas period, above everything else that's existed in the category for a number of years, and actually almost overtook the whole category search of vodka in itself. But when we looked at the top terms that were being searched for in relation to the brand, it wasn't the brand term itself. People were looking for who is the brand owned by? What are the colours of the product? What flavours are within here? And for me, that just sounds like, it mirrors some of what Harold was saying about the fact that if you have these communities who talk about these brands and really get people to want to understand a little bit more of that story, the fact it originated in Wales, it is part of it, and that they close the loop and operate the decom supply chain themselves, just shows how quickly a brand can start from nothing as a challenger, come into incredibly competitive space and start to win.
I love that. A Welsh vodka, as you say, coming into this incredibly saturated place with no money and yet working. One of the striking things there, I suppose, and it comes back to the point about challenges and communities that Harold was talking about earlier on, is you've got to have something that feeds the conversation in that community, right? You can't just launch as a bland product. So the whole point about amplifying your differences as a challenger is absolutely essential if you're going to be of sustained interest to a community like this.
I mean, every time we look at a challenger brand that's competing with one of ours, or as we grow ours, it is always anchored in that fact that you have to have this story and this hook and this reason for people to want to understand and engage essentially with the brand.
So talking of single-mindedness then, so my final question for each of you is, again, a personal one, of your challenger life as a natural challenger, but also you've picked up a few tricks along the way. What's your kind of one bit of advice you'd pass on to somebody who wanted to lean more into a challenger mindset in their organization?
If you have a challenger mindset with the belief that if you do things in a challenging way and in the way that you think are the right way, often you have way more positive outcomes, but also more fun in the process. And people who have fun, people who are positive, people who are motivated actually end up often achieving more. So yeah. it kind of gets into this flywheel from, because you are liking to challenge things and you feel that you are embraced to allow to do it in the way that you want to do because of culture or other things that are happening. Therefore, you often achieve more, which makes you happy, which makes you more positive again, which makes you motivated, and things go better. So to me, the challenger way of life is the only way of life, because I think it leads to the best results and the most personal and company happiness.
I love that. I mean, I completely agree in the joy of being a challenger. And I love the point you make about the intersection between that and success. I think that's so true. Rebecca, what about you? What's your one key thing that you've learned that you'd really like to pass on?
I think that it would be to be courageous. So have the courage of your convictions. I think, I'm sure, Adam, from all the people you've talked about who operate or work within challenger brands in the past, almost everyone at some point will have been told no, or this is not right, or that that's not the done way of things, or that's not how brands behave or how the category behaves. And I think if everybody followed those rules, if everybody stuck to the guidelines of what the right thing to do is, I don't know if we'd be sat here having these conversations about challenger brands. And so for me, it's always been, you know, be courageous, say the things that you're thinking, share the thoughts that you have, challenge the things that you think aren't right for the greater good or for the better outcome. And, you know, feel confident to stick with those things, because I think if too many people too often just sat back and accepted the norm and didn't challenge, then, you know, we wouldn't be in such an exciting place with some of the businesses and brands that we see and some of the work that we're lucky enough to do.
And often when you take the courage and say those things, it turns out that half the people in the room are thinking the same thing as well. They just haven't had the courage to say it, right? So it's not as if actually it's going to alienate you from the rest of the room, by and large. You're just surfacing something that the room kind of wants to voice because it needs to move on in some kind of way. You're a lightning rod to that as a challenger, really. Well, that sadly brings us to the end of this very final episode of the Overthrow 2 podcast. So a very, very big thank you to Harold and Rebecca for joining us and making it such a fascinating and stimulating talk.
Oh, Adam, thank you so much for inviting me. And it was a great aligning and chatting with you and Rebecca. And it's an honor to be here in the final podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yes, and from me as well, thank you very much for inviting me. It has been a privilege to be part of this conversation, and lovely to meet you, Harold, and to be part of your Overthrow podcast series, Adam.
Well, that's all from us, as I say. But if you want any more fuel for your challenger mindset, please go to overthrow2.com, and I think you'll find plenty of stimulus there. Thank you and goodbye.